Hey, everybody, what's going on? It's Monday. Yeah. It seems weird. It doesn't seem like Monday because we didn't stream yesterday because I was away all day.
Yeah.
So I didn't get home until like 10 or 10:30 last night, matter of fact. But I had a good time.
You're down there at Disney.
Well, Disney Springs, which is, I can't afford to go in the damn parks. But, you know, walking around Disney Springs is free. Unless you want to buy something, which case, you know, got to pay for that.
Yeah, Jen was visiting her brother and sister.
Yeah, my two brothers and my sister and my sister-in-law. Yeah, it was really fun. We had all day and wandering around, getting booze, looking at stuff, you know. But yeah, so it's Monday, and that means we're talking about a haunting. Now, Danny had given us some recommendations earlier about episodes that he wanted us to do, and this is one that we hadn't done before, which is a haunting in Ireland. He also wanted us to do Spellbound, which we will probably get to next week unless somebody has a better idea. This is another one that I know we must have seen it like a bunch of times, but when we were watching it, I didn't remember it, but it's actually like a really good episode. I don't know why I keep forgetting like all of these. And I think like for a time, like you were kind of confused. Yeah. You thought we'd done it already, but I think you were confusing it with like the Wheat Sheaf horror.
Yeah. Because there's an Irish girl in it.
Yeah. Because the Wheat Sheaf horror. Memorable. Yeah. The Wheat Sheaf horror, that takes place in England somewhere, but But there was an Irish character in it. But this one was in a house, and this took place entirely in Ireland.
Yeah, I think I'd only seen this one a couple times because it was, I didn't really remember it.
Yeah, I didn't either.
I think I kept skipping it because I kept confusing it with the Wheat Sheaf.
Thinking it was Wheat Sheaf, and you were like, oh, it's like that was a pub or something.
Yeah, yeah. So, looking at this one again, I was glad that it was recommended because this is a good case. This is a classic poltergeist. And it ends a lot like a classic poltergeist end with an exorcism. Which, it sounds fucking crazy, but I'll tell you guys at the end. I mean, most exorcisms, if you actually look at the legitimate cases, like the ones that The Exorcist was based on, it wasn't a haunt, it wasn't a demonic possession, really. It was poltergeist. Poltergeist often mimics demonic possession because it just does whatever you expect it to do. And if you expect it to be a demon, that's what it be. That's what it acts like that. There were, even in the case that I was in, there was, if had it happened way back in the Middle Ages or something, or somebody suggested that it was a demon and that I was possessed, it probably would have started manifesting itself as that, because it's a prank, it's pranking, you know, it's acting up, it's LARPing.
And like you said, because it usually comes from a focused individual, then how it responds is kind of how that focused individual is going to respond. It's kind of like a feedback loop you'd use.
Yeah, it's a recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis under the control of the subconscious. Just like a character in one of your dreams, it seems totally independent. It does. You're fighting it. You're dreaming it. That's what's controlling the poltergeist. It's just another part of you doing it. Weird, but a lot of people don't realize that there are other facets to their personalities in their mind that they can't control. You think that you're just one person. You're actually a multitude of them, and they're talking to each other. It's been proven.
I'm well aware of that.
There's a conversation going on in there, and it's like a consensus. It's got to go through. It's got to go through a fucking committee.
Yeah,
it's happening in the recesses of your mind, and then it says, okay, this is what we're going to do, and then it's passed into the consciousness, and you think it's your idea, but it was all their ideas.
Did they make an animated movie about that one time, didn't they? Like, with all the little, like, characters that were living inside somebody's head that were all, like, different emotions and stuff, and they all had to, like, were arguing all the time.
I got a bunch of them in there. The one with Jack Torrance.
Yeah, that's the main one.
That's the main one. Yeah. Then there's one of them in there like Venom, you know.
Which is kind of the same thing.
Kind of the same thing, you know. I made you what you are, that kind of stuff. You know?
Inside Out, that's right. That's what it was called, that animated movie.
Yeah.
I knew there was one like that. I just couldn't remember the name of it.
Yeah, it's like Venom. It hates you, but it can't live without you, that kind of deal.
That's messed up.
Well, it's just, this has been known for a long time. I mean, it goes back to that Star Trek episode where Kirk had the transporter accident and he got divided into the two. One of them was a good version of him, another one was an evil version of him, and they couldn't survive alone. They couldn't survive And then like McCoy is like, this is a great time to, you know, to what he said, this is a great time to study the recesses of the human mind. This is, you know, and he's going on and on, and Spock's going like, oh yes, you know.
Like Spock always says. Like,
yes, yeah.
Fascinating.
But I think we need to get these guys together. They had to put him back in the transporter.
Yeah, put him back in the transporter. Here, squish him back together.
Yeah, put him back together. Yeah.
Like Play-Doh. Yeah,
so everybody's kind of like that. And then the Skinny Puppy album, Mind the Perpetual Intercourse, is talking about that too. Just, you know, we kind of, our generation grew up in a good time when, you know, where parapsychology actually was having an impact on some of the like underground fucking media that we were listening to and watching, you know, fucking it was classic Star Trek and goth music, and they would all kind of sometimes talk about these issues. Even black metal kind of talk about it, although I don't think they knew what they were talking about, but that's what they were talking about.
Whatever, as long as it sounded cool.
Just, yeah. Yeah. Fucking Conrad. Oh, what's his name? Kronos from fucking Venom. I forgot what his name. Conrad. Oh, shit. I forgot what his real name was. We just called him Kronos. He invented black metal. Back in the 70s.
You called him that? You buddies with him?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, he called himself that. He had a stage name. I know. Kronos.
I'm just fucking with you. Cause you were, the way you said it, you were just kind of like, yeah, all of us dudes that hung out together, we all called him Kronos.
Well, we did hung out with him. We had the record album, and
we hung out with the record albums.
We play that shit and fucking sit in our rooms and shit, fucking pass weed around. Going, oh yeah, man, the devil.
Yeah, that's some pretty deep shit.
Some deep shit, man. That war with Satan, man. There's a fucking war in heaven. It's fucking funny, man. All that satanic metal and shit. It was just. Christianity was indispensable. It was essentially Christian. None of that shit could exist unless you took Christianity as a truth, you know.
I never really got into any of that stuff. Like I said, it all seems very try hard to me. Like they're trying to be like, ooh, yeah. I'm so evil and
yeah. Well, fucking Conrad was said in his interviews that people would go, dude, I don't believe in any of this. This is like a horror movie. It's like, you know, you watch The Evil Dead, you know, it's just this is all it is.
Yeah.
Because they
I think some people kind of took it seriously.
Yeah, they took it seriously. Yeah. It was just a big production, big show, you know, to make you think that this was fucking real, you know.
Conrad Lant.
Lant, that's right. Conrad Lant.
Thank you very much, TV Triggers. I wouldn't have known that.
Conrad Lant, yeah. He's a good dude. Good dude. Coked out most of the time, but women liked him.
Well, weren't they all back then?
Yeah, he got big, too. Fucking taking Deanna Ball, he looked like a big old fucking Stay Puft Marshmallow Man eventually. Retaining all that water. Yeah. Well, they didn't wear hardly any damn clothes back in the early 80s. They just wore leather straps and guitars. So they had to look jacked. Or people would laugh at them. Venom was a good band, man, way ahead of its time. Never got any play in the United States until later. You know. Good band.
Well, what you gonna
It's kind of like Motorhead.
Yeah, okay. I don't know if I've ever heard. I mean, what?
What?
Is she back there fucking with Spock? Is like
Spock moving?
Yeah, Spock's moving.
I didn't see him. Spock's kind of good. He had something to say.
I guess.
Yeah.
I hope Pookie's behind there. Otherwise, we got fucking ghosts in here.
Yeah.
Maybe she's behind it. I can't tell where she went, but I just saw like Spock going like that. It's usually like Pookie rubbing on it, but I don't see her.
Yeah.
Let's see. So, do you want to get into the case, or do you want to like not? Here. All right.
Just to talk about the case.
Because you seem kind of tired. And
I am tired.
And I'm kind
of tired. I got shit sleep last night.
And I'm kind of tired.
Yeah, I got shit sleep last night.
Because, I mean, I got home, like I said, I got home at 10 or 10:30, yeah. But for some reason I couldn't fall asleep right away, and then I kept waking up because I had to go to the bathroom.
This is going
to
be an exciting episode.
Yeah.
There you go. This is a good case.
Yeah, like I said, I really, really did like this episode, and it's like, it amazes me that I didn't remember it, because a lot of stuff happens in this. Like, and like you said, it's not just like, oh, we saw apparitions or stuff. It was like shit moving around.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like poltergeist type shit.
Yeah, they'd see a vase just hanging there. Hanging there, and then it flew off. Which, hell yeah. Jenny's seen it. Hey, thank you very much. Hey, sending us money.
Thank you, Next Dimension Media. Really enjoyed the Socorro UFO episode last week. Thank you very much. Tom, having some inside info on that case made it even more interesting. Love the UFO stories.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we should probably do more of those. I mean, I kind of feel like we've covered most of the real iconic ones.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there's probably some that we haven't
covered. Well, the only thing I had to add is, you know, I knew Lonnie Zamora's son was my squad leader in Korea, Sergeant Zamora. I went and checked my yearbook to see if he was in the platoon during the time that they shot the yearbook, and he had already rotated back to the U.S., so he wasn't in it. I already showed him to you. I'll go through some of my friends from the platoon and see if anybody's got any pictures of Zamora, because we got a lot of pictures during that time, and we're all ganged up on, you know, fucking Facebook groups that are for our unit and for our time. And I'll put the word out and ask if anybody's got any pictures of Sergeant Zamora, and I'll show you what Lonnie Zamora's son was like. And I believe his name was Lonnie too, but I wasn't on a first name basis with your fucking squad leader. It's Sergeant Zamora. That was it.
Yeah, you can't.
And I had to go through a damn redneck fucking team leader to talk to him. If I wanted to talk to fucking Sergeant Zamora, I had to speak to him in smoke signals. That's what this team leader told me. I wasn't allowed to talk to him, but you know, I talked to him anyway. Because I wasn't allowed to go over my team leader's head, you know. This shit, fucking the 506 was fucking wired tight. Anyway, the inside scoop was, as I remember Sergeant Zamora saying what the symbol on the side was, and that FBI agent told him that not to tell the press that symbol. They gave him another one to give, and it was a range finding signal or range finding symbol to help a telescopic lens thing to fucking hook up onto it and figure out how far away it was, and with that you could figure out how far away it was moving. It's like stadia lines, like in the inside of a rifle scope. Is like that
symbol. Somebody commented on there and said that and described the symbol that it was, but I couldn't think of, I can't remember like what it said though.
I just remember in general. It was a long time ago, but I remember it was. He said it was like stadia lines inside of a rifle scope.
Okay.
It's kind of like that. But he said it was like an H or an iron cross. A cross with a tops.
With like bars on the sides.
Bars on the side. And then there were other ones, little ones, tick marks. But it was something that lined up with a reticle inside of a fucking telescopic lens. So if you could look at it, those little bars and lines would all line up, and you could get an estimate of how far away it was. It was something like that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I believe you.
Yeah. That was the story I heard.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard a couple different stories too, but
what were the other stories?
Well, no, we already talked about that on the show.
Okay.
Like, you know, that was all right. A few days ago.
I didn't know if it was
already
new.
Passed.
Okay.
No, I would have mentioned it on there if I knew it. All right, so let's talk about...
I've heard it was a NASA symbol, too, one time. I don't believe it was.
No, I haven't heard that, but, like, I've heard other things, but I've already said about it on the show.
Yeah.
All right, so this episode right here is from season 3, and it's actually episode 5. And so the story is centering around the Fahey family in Galway, obviously in Ireland, which is actually on the west coast of Ireland, I guess. Now, they've lived in this house... At least, like, the older couple have. For, they said, at the point that this, you know, story took place, which was, like, in the mid-1990s, that they had lived in this house for more than 30 years. I'm assuming it was, like, a council house, because, like, on here they said government subsidized, which, like I said, that usually means, like, a council house. You just pay rent to the council and whatever. And you have to get on a waiting list to get in there and all that other kind of stuff. So, the dad, like, the patriarch of the family, his name is Jackie. And he's a bus driver, like, for special needs children. And then his wife, Esther, works at a child care center. She's, like, a cook or something. So in the house also, I don't know how big the house was, but they also had their daughter, Martha, and then Jackie's son, Michael, and also Michael's fiance, whose name was Anne. Now, what ended up happening was that Martha had just had a baby. So, the baby's name was Sarah Louise, and she was born in 1996. So, obviously, the baby was going to be living in this house with Martha as well. Michael and Anne were actually in the process of like planning their wedding about this time. And he said that, because Michael was on, like, the real guy was actually on the show too. And he had just started his own business. So they were like, oh, you know, everything looked like it was looking up. Like, we look like in a bright future and everything like that. And I will note that prior to the baby being born, they had never had anything unusual happen in this house at all, apparently, in the entire time that they lived here. And like I said, that at that point had been more than 30 years. So, which, like I said, leads me to believe more that, like you said, it's kind of more a poltergeist thing. If, I mean, if it happened the way they said, I think it was probably like poltergeist and not. Because, you know, spoiler alert, they actually did kind of go like, oh, it's a haunting and there's like a story about it. But it sounded a lot more like poltergeist. Yeah, to me.
They always do that. They try to make some story behind them.
Yeah, well, you know.
I have my own theory. Go ahead.
Okay, well, yeah, we'll get into that when we get to that. Okay. So now, like, not too long after the baby was born, I believe when the baby was about 8 months old, the neighbors started doing, like, renovation next door. So it's like, they're council houses, so they're connected, you know what I mean? You know, so it's on the other side of the wall. So there's, like, a bunch of noise going on in the next room, so they actually had to move the crib, like, the baby's crib, over to the other side of the room, because, like, there was kept, banging on the wall, like, over the crib or whatever, because they were renovating over there. So, not too long after, I guess, the construction started, because it wasn't real clear, because they were saying, oh, the baby was born, but from what I looked up on other sources, I think the baby was 8 months old, like, when the neighbors started doing the construction. And they said a few months after the construction, or a few days after the construction started, Michael, he notices, like, this horrible, horrible smell. He said it smelled like rotten meat, like, in the house. Now, the first thing he thought, like most people would, he's like, oh, maybe like a rat died under floorboards, or maybe the pipes are backed up or something like that. So Jackie, the dad, he comes into the house and smells it too. He's like, Jesus Christ, what the fuck is that noise? What the fuck is that smell? You know what I mean? Now, they can't figure out where it's coming from. Like, they're going all around the house and it's like, it seems like it's coming from here, but it's like, then they go over there and it's like, and then now it seems like it's coming from over there. They said it seemed like the source was like moving around and they couldn't figure out exactly where it was coming from. So they call the landlord up to complain about it. And the landlord sends a couple of guys out the next morning to have a look and see if they can figure out what this is. Weirdly, though, the guys come in and they don't smell anything at all. Like, they're just like, we don't smell anything. Like, describe to us what it smells like, because we don't smell anything. It smells totally fine in here. But at this point, like, Jackie and Michael are like, I can't believe you can't smell that, because it's like, it's so overpowering that we can't even, like, be in here. It's like we can't even take it any longer.
What that is telling me is that that aroma is not there.
Yeah,
the sensation of that stink is being put directly into the minds of those people, which is be more efficient for a poltergeist to do that than to generate molecules that had a stink, you know.
Yeah,
it's the illusion of it. But here's the weird thing, is this has happened before in other kind of cases. It's happened to me. I thought there was a gas leak in the house one time, and I could smell fucking propane, or I could smell it. Nobody else could. But it's just my imagination.
Yeah.
There was no gas leak.
Yeah, because you know? That's the thing. It's like your sense of smell is a sense just like any other one. So if your like eyes can be fooled and your ears can be fooled, like your nose can too.
I had convinced myself that there was a gas leak because there was a propane bottle in there and I thought it was left open. Or I thought the... Not the leftover. I thought it was leaking.
Right.
The connection. You know, I thought the connection was... I was convinced that the connection wasn't right. It kept bothering me, kept worrying me. And I could smell it. But, no. There was no leak.
Well, you know how sometimes, too, like, if you smell something bad and then, like, even after the smell is gone, like, you still keep smelling it. Yeah. And I think after a time, it's probably, like, that's just got to be, like, your imagination.
Sometimes poltergeist cases will start with weird phenomenon, banging, okay, phantom smells. But are you? Is it the poltergeist that is causing these, or is this phenomenon causing the poltergeist? In other words, your imagination of this weird smell, the fear of it, is starting to ramp it up. You hear banging on the walls next door, where construction is going on, and that's bothering you. and you're worrying about that. You're worrying about that waking up the baby in this case. So stress starts to be introduced into the environment.
Yeah.
Which might cause the poltergeist. It might cause it. Because I think it's the mama in this case that's doing it. She just had a child 8 months ago. Who knows what her hormones were like? And then the stress in the house, maybe financial stress. And we don't know what's going through her mind. Maybe a part of her didn't you know, wasn't happy with the family situation. And this is some kind of form of psychic rebellion to maybe help bring the family together tighter against a common foe or something. Maybe she felt insecure there. Like, you know, like they were going to get divorced or something, or they were going to get kicked out of the house, maybe. So having the threat of this demon or ghost, all right, is what is holding the family together now, so she feels safer in a way in the face of a threat. So she generates it using psychic abilities at a subconscious level. That's what a parapsychologist would say. I would agree. Based on
Is kind of interesting that nothing weird had ever happened in this house this whole entire time. Because this family had been living here the whole entire time.
Yeah, it's not a ghost.
And
it's,
nothing weird had been happening. But, like, because of the, you know, 1-2 punch of the renovations next door and the baby being born, like, over just, like, a brief period. And like you said, there might have been other stuff, too, like, on the show that they didn't mention.
Right. Financial stress or relationship problems.
Right. Could have been lots of stuff.
Right.
Because they didn't really specify, like, Martha, who was the baby's mom, they didn't specify, like, where the dad was. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't live there with them.
Okay.
Because, you know what I mean? Because Michael and Anne were the other two.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They were the ones getting married. It wasn't their kid.
That's right.
That was Michael.
So she was a single mom.
Yeah. Like, Michael was Martha's brother.
There you go right there.
So it might. So there might have been something. I don't know. I don't know them. But I'm just saying. I just speculating.
It was some kind of stress from that. And woman's hormones, you know, go kind of crazy during the whole birth process and the child rearing process. And then she's under all this stress. That should be enough. And I don't know how old she was, but age really isn't a factor. Puberty is a factor, but I've been able to reproduce it here in my fucking 50s. It takes longer, and it's not as impressive, and it doesn't last as long. Usually, if it's a teenager or a young person, it's not gonna last longer than a month, and then it gets resolved, one way or the other, eventually. And how this is resolved is, I think, is how a lot of them are resolved. A person's talked out of it. But okay, let's go.
Yeah, so these two guys come over to, like, check out this smell, and they don't smell anything. And just, you know, to humor the people in the house, they go up and they pull the toilet aside. It's like they check all the pipes inside and outside and stuff. But they're kind of, Jackie, the dad, he was on, like, the real guy was on there. And he said, yeah, they were just looking at us like we were imagining it or we were nuts or something like that. And they were like, yeah, I don't think it's your pipes that's the problem or something like that. It's like, but we'll check anyway, like, while we're here. But they didn't really think, like, anything was wrong. Now, over the next few days, like, after the guys left and they couldn't find anything, the smell, they said, got exponentially worse. Like, Esther kept cleaning, like, all the time and dumping bleach all over everything, like, down in the drains and stuff like that. But the stink just kept persisting to the point where they just all felt like they were constantly nauseated. Like, they couldn't get away from it. Nobody else could smell it but them. I mean, apparently, like, the two people that came, like, to look at the shit, they couldn't smell it. Now, they said that a few weeks later, the smell suddenly just vanished with no explanation, like just as suddenly as it had started. And not too long after that, Michael and Anne are sleeping one night and then are awakened by the sound of a baby crying. Now, of course, the first thing they think, because there is a baby in the house, is they think that it's Sarah Louise. And they're laying there woken up being like, why doesn't Martha, like, get up and pick the baby up and, like, try to quiet her down or whatever? And they're like, that's really lame. So the baby's just crying and crying. So Michael's like, all right, fuck this shit. So he gets up and goes to check on the baby. But when he goes in the nursery, Sarah Louise is just laying there very quietly, like, with a pacifier in her mouth. It wasn't her that was crying, even though he can very, very clearly still hear a baby crying, like, really loud. But it's obviously not her because he's looking right at her and she's not crying.
Yeah, and I think it would travel around the house too, huh? The sound.
Yeah, they kind of heard it everywhere. They kind of heard it everywhere because that seemed like a very common thing, this baby crying. So Michael comes back in the room and Anne's like, oh, you know, what was the deal? And he's like, yeah, that wasn't the baby. That wasn't the real baby crying. It's like, I don't know what the fuck it is. And he said, as soon as he came back in the bedroom, he felt like someone was pushing on his chest, like he couldn't breathe. So, you know, this is Ireland, I guess. I'm presuming they're Irish Catholic. So he grabs a rosary and kind of starts praying and like the feeling goes away. But then he said that him and Anne both started praying, but the more they were praying, like, the louder that the baby crying got. Like, they said it almost sounded like they were hurting it. You know what I mean? Like, when they were praying, it just kept getting louder and louder. So then they stopped praying, and then the crying also stopped, like, very, very suddenly, which they thought was really weird. So some unspecified time later, I think it was the next morning, actually. So Michael goes into the kitchen, and Jackie and Esther, his mom and dad, are just searching frantically through the kitchen, like, looking for the baby's bottles. They're just like, they were right here in the cabinet, and now they're gone, and they can't find them anywhere. So they're like, did you guys move them? Did you hide them? They're like, no, like, we haven't touched them. I don't know where they went. Now, Michael said, did you guys hear a baby crying the night before? And they're like, no, I don't know what you're talking about. So the mom and dad didn't hear it. Jackie said at this point, Michael was starting to get, he called him like getting withdrawn. And Michael says, look, I think this house is haunted. Like, I think something's going on. And he's like, I heard all this baby crying and it wasn't the actual baby. And maybe that's what happened with the bottles too. Like, maybe the ghost moved them. But Jackie's like, you have got to be fucking kidding me. I was like, and he just like laughs it off. And Esther, the mom, she doesn't really believe it either. And she's like, you know, just stop talking about that kind of stuff. It's like, that's not what it is. So at this point too, Michael gets very frustrated and he just yells, hey, if there's a ghost in here, like, give us a sign, but nothing happens. At which point, like, his dad is just kind of like, see, I told you, like, there's nothing here. So you've just been down the pub too much drinking, he said. So later that night, I think it was that same night, Michael and Anne go to bed. And again, they hear this really loud baby crying. And so they're just, like, sitting there on the bed, and they just keep praying and praying. At this point, like, Jackie comes and, like, knocks on their bedroom door and is like, hey, can you guys put a fucking sock in it? Because he's like, I still don't hear a baby crying, but all I hear is you motherfuckers in here praying, and you guys are getting louder and louder, and you're keeping us awake, so knock it off. You know, he's getting a little pissed off about it. Now, a week after that, Jackie, the dad, and Martha, they take the baby to, like, you know, just a doctor's appointment or whatever. And they come home. And when they go into the nursery to put the baby in her crib, they find a bunch of the baby's stuffed animals arranged in a circle facing outward, like in the middle of the floor. And then in the middle is, like, an open music box, which is, you know, playing its little tune or whatever with, like, a little ballerina in it. Now, this reminded me very much, if you remember the other episode of Haunting, which is called Sally's House, pretty much the same exact thing happened in that, like, in the nursery where they came in and, like, all the stuffed animals were, like, in a circle, inexplicably.
Yeah, poltergeists do that a lot. The one that we had would arrange things on the floor in patterns or in some way or another. It arranged little hand towels on a bed one time in the shape of a smiley face, two eyes, a nose, and I got a picture of it. Yeah, so the picture's in the book, isn't it? Yeah,
I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah, even though that wasn't at Mammoth, that was at Lois's house. Later, it's weird. Made a little face, and it didn't take it long to make it either.
That is pretty weird.
Yeah,
but I just thought it was really strange the way that particular thing with the stuffed animals was like exactly like the Sally's house thing. Which, you know, was a completely different case. Because I think that Sally's house, I think that happened in the U.S. I think we did a show about that, but it was a long time ago. So Jackie sees this and he's like, well, it must have been just like Michael or Anne, like playing a prank. But Martha's like, yeah, but they're both at work. So, and like, why would they do that anyway? You know what I mean? Like, nobody was there. So there was really nobody there to do it. So one night, again, some unspecified time later, Michael and Anne are sleeping in the room as usual, and they get awakened by what Michael described as like a bright orb And it looked like, at least from the reenactment, that it looked like it came in through the window, and then it kind of, he said it kind of like slowly dissipated, like it was this really bright light like came through there. And then they started hearing the phantom baby crying again. Now, he tells his dad, Jackie, about it the next morning, but Jackie's like, oh, it was probably just, you know, a car headlights, like a car coming by, like, shining in the window. But Michael's like, look, you know, we have cars coming by here all the time. I know what fucking headlights look like. And he's like, and this was way, way brighter than headlights. And Jackie, at this point, is like, he's like, tell me right now to my face that you did not do the weird thing with the stuffed animals. And Michael's like, I swear to God, he's like, you know, I wouldn't do that. He's like, I didn't touch them. And at this point, like, Jackie's like, okay, he concedes that there's probably something paranormal going on. So he's like, well, maybe we should call a priest. Now, Michael's like, I don't think a priest would believe us, and we probably couldn't get them here anyway. So Jackie's like, well, why don't we put a tape recorder in the baby's room and see if we can record the weird sounds, like the baby crying, and maybe that would serve as proof, and then maybe the priest will come there, like, if we play him that, you know what I mean? So Michael says, okay, it's worth a shot, so he's gonna put a tape recorder in the baby's room, like, that evening. So Michael goes up there to put the tape recorder in the nursery, but then he realizes, like, oh shit, I left the blank tapes downstairs, because this is the mid-90s, you know what I mean? So he goes downstairs to get them, and while everybody is downstairs, they hear a really loud noise coming from the nursery, and then when they go back up to check, they find the tape recorder is totally busted, like, into a bunch of pieces, like, in the middle of the floor. They said it looked like somebody threw it, like, with great force. You know what I mean? In the reenactment, it looked like it was just kind of, like, all together, but it was just, like, in complete and total pieces. Like, it wouldn't have done that if it had just, like, fallen off the dresser or something. It looked like somebody had, like, slammed it, like, down on the floor. Like, it was all broken into a million pieces. So, meanwhile, while that's going, while they're checking upstairs and being like, how the hell could that be all broken apart like that? Esther and Anne are downstairs, and the curtains on the front window start, like, opening and closing, like, really fast. Like, yeah, in quick succession, like,
yeah,
a few times. Which I think happened, yeah, in your thing, too, didn't it?
Yeah. I just turned away from the curtains or walking away from them towards Red when he was in the damn doorway. And boom! Or no, actually, it was him. He was turning away from, I was watching. I was looking at him, and he was walking towards me. And behind him, the curtains fucking flew open. It was like a gunshot. He nearly ran over me to get away from me. And he turned around and looked at him and goes, God damn, they flew up. And I said, yeah. And it was like, pow! In a single stroke. I don't think you could have pulled them that hard. Because, you know, there was like a, you know, those little, it had a little rope that you pulled to open them.
Yeah.
I think if you yanked that rope hard, fast enough and hard enough to do that, I think that rope would have broke. You know what I mean? I don't know, yeah, how it was done. It was done by just pushing them open at the top, I think. It was weird. And I remember, like, one of the curtains, that the way it moved looked weird, you know? Like, the bottom of it snaked up and, oh, you know, man, it was weird. Really weird. Make it jump out of your skin, you know? And back of, hair on the back of your neck would fucking stand straight up like a cat, you know? Like, yeah, it's weird, man.
Yeah, that was like the first thing I thought of. Like, in this one, yeah, I'm not, like I said, I'm not sure, because in the reenactment, I don't know if it's exactly like what they saw, but in the thing, they showed them like opening and closing like really, yeah, quick, like a couple of times, like two or three times, like, whoosh, 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 yeah, like that. And the, you know, the two women were just like, nope. And then Jackie came down, and it's like they looked fucking terrified. And he's like, all right, we're getting the fuck out of the house, like, right now.
Yeah, just thinking about that thing flying open. Back then, man, it's got my hair standing up on the back of my neck right
Holy
now.
Holy shit, what if that did, yeah, that, man, just right,
yeah,
here?
Yeah,
right,
don't, yeah.
Don't say that. Don't, ooh, say that, Jenny. Yeah, that would be really something. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so Jackie tells everyone to get the fuck out of the house. Well, like I said, these Irish people, they don't fuck around. It's like as soon as like some haunted shit starts happening, they're like, yep, we're out, bye. They don't like hang around, you know what I mean? So they get the fuck out of the house. So they go over and stay next door with their neighbors who were like really good friends of theirs. And so they basically all just camped out on their neighbor's floor, you know what I mean? Like, just little sleeping bags or whatever. And Jackie said, okay, well, I'm going to call the church first thing in the morning and see if there's anything they can do about it. So a few days after that, the parish priest comes and he's gonna bless the house. Now, during the blessing, the phantom baby starts crying again. And they all said it seemed pretty clear that the priest heard it, but pretended that he didn't. They said you could kind of tell, like, from his face that he could hear it. And, like, his voice was getting louder and shit like that. But it's like he was pretending that he didn't hear it because I guess he was, like, freaked out.
Now, they told him to ignore it.
Well, that's what, yeah, because I think they went into that on, like, one of the other programs where they're just, like, supposed to pretend that it's not happening.
Pretend that it's not happening, right?
Yeah, because that's like, oh, you're giving it power, like, if you give it attention kind of thing. Yeah, I can't remember what episode that was, but an episode we were talking about before, I think they specifically were talking about that.
Yeah, the priest said, don't pay any attention to it and it'll go away.
Yeah, because the family were like, well, easy for you to say because you don't fucking live here. You know what I mean? But, yeah. So he's, like, pretending that it's not existing. But they said you could tell by his face that he could hear it, though. So they're, like, and the baby crying was just getting louder and louder. And all of them could hear it. Like, all the family could hear it, too.
This is definitely poltergeist phenomenon. And one of the weird things that I noticed, and I've noticed it throughout a lot of the cases, that the cases that sound legitimate to me because they kind of follow the same kind of pattern that I saw happen with our fucking incident at Mammoth and beyond. In general, poltergeists don't talk. They don't speak. They can vocalize, but they don't. And they can write, but maybe only a word or two, and it's scribble, you know. So whatever's doing this in the human mind, using these psychic abilities, is not a part of the brain that has verbal skills. It understands speech, but it can't reproduce it. But it can reproduce the human voice. It did on one occasion. I talked about it in the book, but it just sounded like a bunch of garbled backward stuff, and I ran from it. It was just coming out of the thin air. Fucking in the corner of a dark room, man, that I was trying to sleep in. It was at Lois's house. This was after Mammoth, following week. It was fucking spooky. It sounded like water bubbling at first, and that kind of went backwards, or started sounding like backward masking on a damn record, you know, like that, you know. It was fucking bad.
And yeah, I would not like that if I just heard that coming from a random corner.
And then it had been throwing fucking clothes on me. I was hiding from it underneath the damn sleeping bag, and I could hear the fucking drawer open up from the Rusty's dresser, and something, and then a T-shirt hit the top of the fucking sleeping bag and then drag its way down to the foot. That was on another night, though, that it did that. That was fucking pissing me, scaring the shit out of me, fucking with me.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was just like that. You saw that remote jump off the fucking table. Mm-hmm. Imagine if that was clothes coming out of a dresser drawer in the middle of the night, hitting you on the head, and you're hiding underneath the blankets.
I was like, you fucking dickhead boy.
Yeah, you
like,
can't go anywhere.
Fucking pitching socks at me and stuff.
Yeah.
From across the room.
Yeah.
Shit off.
And when I woke up the next morning, all the Rusty's dresser drawers were open, and it was all empty, and all of his fucking laundry, clean laundry, was piled up at the foot of my sleeping bag.
Yeah, does that poltergeist over. Have anything better to do than just like pitch clothes at you all night?
Yeah.
I guess not.
I fell asleep. I didn't fall asleep. I passed out. I think from fright. I just fucking...
You just shut down.
Shut down, because it was throwing clothes on me. They can't speak. If you start hearing these stories of them, of it speaking, I would immediately think it was a fucking falsehood. It didn't like to be questioned because it couldn't really answer. It could make shapes. It could draw little things, make little smiley faces. It could scribble a word or two. It could understand what you were saying, but it would get frustrated if you tried to make it right. Just throw the pen at you. It doesn't have verbal skills. Whatever part of the brain has this ability, it can't speak. It tries, but it can't. It's not. It doesn't have any verbal skills, which is, I think, is important. It's one of the hemispheres of the brain. So that's a hint, a clue as to what it is. We were trying to analyze it and figure it out what it was. You know, we're like, okay, it's a ghost. Well, what kind of a ghost? Who is it? You know, what does it want? You know, is it a ghost? Is it just an invisible being? Maybe is it an invisible being like from another dimension? There's a lot, you know, Red came up with a lot of good explanations of what it might have been. He's like, this could be an alien, just invisible in another dimension. But you know, no, it was too humanoid, too human-like. You know, what would an alien be doing that for?
We never know. They're an alien.
It was doing stuff cross between what a child would do and a monkey. But arranging things in fucking geometric patterns. Why would a human do that? You know, why would a ghost do that? Weird. And it would do it fast. With seconds. You know, turn your back and turn around, there'd be a geometric pattern or something that you had just been touching, you know. Or in things from other rooms and other parts of the house. And you don't know how they even got in that room. So they must have fucking teleported or something. Because you didn't see them pass you. It's wild, man. It's a real wild fucking phenomenon.
Zach says, 1 to 10, how bad are the Irish accents in this episode? Not bad. Actually, I think a couple of the actors might actually have been Irish. I'm not entirely sure. They're not as bad as the Wheat Sheaf accents, yeah. That's for sure. Yeah. I mean, those were pretty wretched. These ones were passable.
I think they were Irish.
I think some of them were. I don't think all of them were, but it was certainly like a lot closer than, like I said, yeah. The Wheat Sheaf one, which were obviously not British people. You know what I mean?
I had an Irish girlfriend when I was living in Boston. Her name was Fiona O'Shea, and fucking, I used to try to do that accent. She goes, "No, she'd get mad. No, not
I would
even
get
close.
Mad too if you were
not
like
even
mocking
close. This
me
is, no,
like
come
that.
On, let me see if I can do it." And I try to do it. And she goes, "Ah, no, it sounds like shit. You know, she's mean. You know."
Well, she was probably right though. So
I was just trying to do it. Yeah, I couldn't do it though. I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Or actually, I think I was eventually starting to get close to it, but she didn't want to give it to me. You know, she's like, no. But
I very, very rarely heard an American that did like a really good British accent. Like, I'm sure there are some that can do it, but I'm just going mostly by like actors and stuff like that. It's like you can always tell. I'm not really sure, but it's not true the other way around, because I've seen lots of British actors that I didn't know were British actors, and they were playing Americans, and it never occurred to me that they weren't Americans.
Yeah,
so they can do it a lot better the other way around, and I don't know why that is.
Dude from The Walking Dead, he sounded
Andrew
Southern.
Lincoln. Yeah,
yeah, he sounded Southern. Although
I didn't even realize until later, because I hadn't seen, I didn't see Love Actually, which was like a British movie that he was in before The Walking Dead. I hadn't seen that, so I didn't realize that he was a British actor until much later.
Yeah, he sounded Southern. Now, later on, sometimes he slightly overdid it with the Southernisms, the drawl a little too long sometimes, but it was close. I mean, that was within parameters. You know, if I get around a bunch of fucking rednecks, man, and we're drinking, my accent gets much stronger. Just a few minutes of talking with my dad, I like go back in time to like the 1930s shit, you know.
Isabella said Bridget Jones, the accent is excellent. Okay, that's an exception. Because that actually, what the fuck is that actress's name? That American actress? She played Bridget Jones, who was a British character, and I thought she did a good job like on the accent, but that's like the only one I can think of though. I'm sure there's more about that, but yeah, so thanks for bringing that up. But the thing about it is that Andrew Lincoln was also on an episode of that new like Guillermo del Toro show, Cabinet of Curiosities, and he played an American on that one too, although he wasn't playing a Southerner. He's playing, I think he was from Boston, or he was more like in New England, but he did that fine too.
Yeah.
It was fine. Renee Zellweger, thank you.
Yeah, it's because the British can act. They actually train them. American actors, they're not. They're in there.
I mean, some of them have been trained over here, but it's not like I said. Not it's really not. There. We've kind of gone into that before. It's kind of not like a story. I don't think it's taken as serious.
That's not serious here. You get a part to play, but you know how well you give head or whatever it is on the fucking casting couch, or how many drugs you're gonna fucking contribute at the party, and just, you know, it's that kind of shit. They're crooks.
Yeah.
There's no acting craft. The best actors we had, that was like a generation ago, and they weren't that great. They were just better than what was available in Hollywood, you know. Robert De Niro and shit. You know, they had narrow bands. Fucking Dustin Hoffman. He was all right. It's just that he wasn't that great. You know, he wasn't, you know, that great. He was just, he was good.
Mago says, Love Actually is worth a look. I've seen it since then. I don't love it. It's very, very chick flicky, and that's not really my thing. But, and it's a little bit weird. I think I would be really weirded out, like, if Andrew, like, if somebody pulled, like, what Andrew Lincoln does to that poor girl in this movie. Like, showing up, like, on the eve of her wedding, like, with the signs, like, saying he's in love with her and stuff. I'd be like, yeah, no, I don't think that's so great. A lot of stuff in here, I don't think it's, like, so great. Zach says, Meryl Streep has left the chat. Danny Rowling said, Glenn Quinn from Roseanne was Irish-born and was good at masking his accent, even in the 97 anthology film Campfire Tales. Yeah, it's like, I've had it happen, like, a bunch of times where I saw a movie, like, or a TV series, and it didn't even occur to me that any of the actors on there were not Americans, if they were playing Americans. And then later on, like, I saw an interview or I found out they were British or something like that. I'm like, oh, well, good on you, because you fooled me, and I've lived here pretty much my whole entire life. So, you know. Mega said, oh, yeah, he's a stalker boy. He is. He's a stalker. I mean, you know, I don't think we should encourage that kind of behavior. So,
what are you talking about?
I'm just saying. It's a movie called Love, Actually. Okay. It's like a British Christmas movie. Mm. But, yeah, so there's a really funny article I read, like, a long time ago about how, where it just, like, eviscerates, like, Love, Actually, and it's, like, fucking hilarious. So, yeah, so where was I? All right, so they all get in the house. They go to the neighbor's house. All right, so the priest is there. The baby crying gets louder and louder. The priest is just, like, ignoring it, la, 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 you know, and he's just, like, keeps doing the blessing and everything. They're like, okay, well, now we got to go bless the upstairs. So he goes into, or they try to go into the baby's room, into the nursery. But when they get up there and try to open the door to the nursery, the crib is apparently up against the door from the inside, which also happened in your case.
Very poultry.
Not with a crib, but it was with a bed, right? Like a bunk bed.
Bed. Now, It almost tried to do that with a dresser one time, but you could get it open. It's just the dresser had moved, and it looked like it moved it towards where it tried to do it, you know. But it didn't. The dresser didn't make it all the way. But I like the fact that the neighbors are starting to become aware of it. They're getting involved in the case, because that happened in Mammoth Mountain. It's when we got to Lois's house. Lois told all her friends who were neighbors. She knew them well enough to tell them. And so when it kicked off at Lois's house, this is a week after the main event, they got to see some of it. They got to see it. So
yeah,
the other people witnessed it too. You know, one of them was Red's friend, Jimmy, and Jimmy saw that knife action thing happen. And he goes, okay, man, I gotta go, man. This is too much, man. He left, and they never saw him again.
Yeah, he noped right out of there.
Yeah, they never saw him again. And Red had known him for a couple of years. They never saw him do it again. He goes, nah, man. He didn't want to hang out.
He didn't want any part of that action.
No part of Red. He goes, yeah, man, that was weird. Yeah, man, I can't handle that, man. That's everything. He worked at fucking Round Table Pizza.
Interesting.
He was a cook at Round Table Pizza. Go down there and get some free pizza.
I don't know. See, I always thought that would be, like, really, really fast. I know it's scary and stuff, but I always thought it would be, like, really fascinating. I don't think that would make me be like, yeah, no, I'm not going to talk to those people ever again. That's so
in the early
strange.
80s, man, when people didn't have there was no internet and people really...
I guess you didn't have much context for it.
You didn't know context for it. And, you know, people are like, well, we can't tell anybody. They'll think we're fucking crazy.
Yeah.
But you could tell close friends and relatives, and they'd come over, they could see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, this whole idea, why didn't you call the cops? Man, fuck the cops. You weren't going to call the cops. They'd come, and they'd just fucking arrest you. You're crazy. You know, send your ass to a fucking mental asylum.
That's what they would do. I mean, unless you can see a fucking intruder in your house, I'm not calling the cops. They're not dealing with that situation.
They show up and shoot you.
That's what I'm saying.
You know,
it's like,
this is the United States, you know.
Yeah, that's how that would go.
They take the kids from you. You'd be all too crazy to have children. We got to take your children.
That's what I mean.
Don't move. Bam, 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 bam.
Yeah, it wouldn't go well for you. It wouldn't go well for you.
Yeah.
Just saying.
It's like the death squad. Yeah. That was California, man.
Well, I'm just saying, like, it'd probably be fucking, and it's probably gotten worse since then.
Yeah.
To be honest with you. Yeah. Like, everywhere. I wouldn't call the cops unless I was, like, in fucking dire peril.
And if you called the newspaper, they would immediately write up something about how crazy you were, and they'd call fucking Child Protective Services and shit.
Well, I mean, this, we'll get into that because the media did get involved in this one, but it's like, in a way, like, I think the media getting involved, it was kind of, like, shitty at first, but it did end up, like, helping them in the end.
Yeah.
So they didn't really know what else to do. Like I said, this wasn't, this was pretty, like, not pre-internet, but pre, like, internet being widespread. This was, like, mid-90s, so.
Right.
I mean, we had the internet in 95, but it was still pretty rudimentary.
Yeah, you were the shit if you were on the internet in 95.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had just got it. And like I said, it was like super shitty. Like, it's, you know, it was dial-up and all
that. Bought stuff on Hot Topic across the internet, fucking 98. I would have thought I was the shit, man. I was in fucking futuristic, man.
Yeah.
Internet purchases.
Well, yeah, it's like now everybody's just like, yeah, big deal.
Yeah, big deal. No, man, back in 98, that was some fucking high-tech shit.
So, yeah, so the priest goes up there. They can't open the door. I mean, they can't open the door, but they kind of open it partway, and he's like, oh, the crib is against the door from the inside. And then the priest kind of makes a crack, like, oh, well, you guys did that. And then Michael's like, how the fuck could we have done that? How could we get out? Like, there's not another door or nothing. So, but they were able to kind of, like, you know, the crib's not heavy, so they were able to, like, kind of push the door open, and they said, hey, priest, get in there and, like, bless that shit. So the priest goes in there. And he does the funny thing that always makes me laugh, like, every, because they do this a lot on a haunting, where the priest will go in there and just be like, bless, 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 okay, bye, I'm done, you know what I mean? And he just, like, runs the fuck out of there, which I thought was, like, very, very funny. He didn't run, but he was clearly just like, yep, and then he left. So they're kind of like, okay, well, we hope that whatever the priest did, like, that whole deal has made this better. But just to be on the safe side, they decided they were all going to sleep downstairs, like, in the living room. Like, so they all camped out in the living room so they could all be together. In the middle of the night, though, Jackie, the dad, is, he got woke up by, I guess, like, a creaking sound. I think he kind of heard the baby crying, too, but it was mostly, like, a really loud creaking noise. Like, somebody was, like, walking down the steps or, like, up the upstairs hallway or something. So he goes up to see, like, what's going on. And on the landing, there's, like, a vase, like, on a little side table there, and he said it suddenly just floated up in the air, pretty much. He's, like, just right in front of his face like that. He said it tipped over and then just fell to the ground and, like, broke. And he wigged the fuck out.
Yeah.
He said, I mean, he ran out the house and fell down the front stairs, and he said he didn't even remember running out the house. He just remembered, like, coming to, and he was, like, laying on the lawn because it, like, freaked him out so much. Seeing that fucking vase do that, like, right in front of his face. That's what he said. So he didn't even, like, remember running out the house. So they all go over to the neighbor's house again. I mean, these neighbors are saints, man. Like, putting up with this shit all the time. Like, all these people, like, running over here every 5 hours going, like, holy shit, our house is haunted. So they go over to the neighbor's house again. But they're like, okay, well, we can't keep imposing on the neighbors. We have to find some other place to stay. So they have a relative who I think they said was Jackie's sister. But she lives, like, 4 hours away, but she has, like, extra room. She has, like, a big house. So they're like, considering going there. Because Esther, the mom, she's like, I have to get the hell out of this house. I need some rest. I'm losing it. You know, she's just really not doing well. So Jackie and Michael go back into the house to, like, pack some stuff for her and Jackie. So Jackie and Esther, the older mom and dad, they're going to go to the relative's house. But Michael and Martha and the baby have to stay behind because Michael and Anne have to work and, you know what I mean? They can't just, like, take off and, like, go 4 hours away. And Martha is like, well, I'm going to stay because, you know, even if the house is haunted, it's like the ghost hasn't really done anything to her or the baby. Now, Martha is the person that you think is the focus of this, right? Because that's the baby mama. But she made the point that's why she didn't leave, because she said, it hasn't done anything to harm me or the baby. Because that's one thing, the baby didn't really seem to be aware of anything that was going on and didn't really seem to be adversely affected, which was good, but you know what I mean. All the adults were, though. So Jackie and Esther said, well, they felt really bad about leaving everybody there, but Esther just couldn't stand being in the house anymore and she just had to get the fuck out of here. So the next day, Michael and Anne have to go to work. So they leave Martha and the baby alone in the house. Now, Martha hears the baby crying upstairs and goes up to check on her, but the door to the nursery won't open. So she runs to the neighbor's house again for help. One of the neighbors comes over with like a toolbox and they try to pry the door open. And like, it, but as soon as she gets in there, like with the crowbar or whatever the hell, it just goes and like opens by itself, right? And Sarah Louise, the baby, is just like laying in there like, what? You know what I mean? Like nothing at all is going on. So Martha just like scoops up the baby and is like, nope, and goes out into and stays with the neighbors all day again. So then when Michael and Anne get home from work, they find a note from Martha saying, yeah, some fucked up shit happened and I'm over at the neighbor's house. So Michael goes over to fetch her to bring her back home and leaves Anne alone in the house. So Anne is like sitting in the living room looking very nervous, then starts to hear that creaking sound again. It sounds like somebody is walking on the stairs or like walking on the upstairs hallway. Like it's really, really loud. And then she starts hearing the baby crying again. Then a picture of Sarah Louise that's like framed on an end table, she said it flew off by itself and like broke all over, like the glass broke all over the floor. So Anne is like, yep, nope, and runs out of the house. And she tells the other two what happened because they're like out in the yard. So they're like, we gotta go. So they all climb in Michael's car. Michael goes back in the house like to get the baby carrier and some diapers and shit like that. Now, while he's in the house, he said, oh, well, I better call mom and dad and tell them what's going on and tell them where we're going to be because we're not going to stay in this fucking house now. And he said when he was dialing and trying to call, like, there was a weird noise on the phone. It's very Amityville Horror. It was, like, a very weird noise on the phone, almost like he said it was almost like they didn't, like, it was the ghost or whatever, like, didn't want him to call. So he tries to call again. And then he puts the receiver to his ear, and there's this really horrible, like, high-pitched sound. And then he said, and this is going a little bit, I don't know. I don't know if I buy this or not, but he said he dropped the receiver, and he said it, like, melted. Like, it was melted in the middle. Like, what they showed on the reenactment, it didn't look like it was, you know, melted like a puddle or anything like that, but it looked like the middle part. It was one of those, you know, receivers where you...
Yeah, kind
of
bent, huh?
That's bent like that, but it was, yeah, like, just kind of, like, melty in the middle.
Yeah.
And then he said he's just like, yeah, no, and he runs out the house. He said he felt like someone was pushing him out of the house.
Yeah.
And then he goes out on the porch, and then the front door just slammed. Like, they were like, yeah, get the fuck out, you know
the,
what I mean?
The melty receiver is plausible. There's a related phenomenon that sometimes happens in poltergeist... cases called pyrokinesis, all right, which is where spontaneous fires happen, which would be easy for RSPK to do that. You're just accelerating the molecules to so they get hotter, and then it would burst into flames. So if you can move a big object, you can move little objects, no problems, like objects the size of molecules. Heat is just motion. So all you do is agitating the molecules in that plastic receiver and it gets soft, you know, that's all it is.
Yeah, I guess so.
be easy for a poltergeist to do it, although I never seen it do it, but it was never suggested. Had I asked it to do it, it probably would have.
Yeah, because it did do stuff that you, yep, thought about.
Yeah, it responded to requests.
Yeah, it's kind of nice that
last time I told it to do something, I asked it to give me some money, and it did. Remember, gave me the coins that were sitting on the side of the bed.
Yeah.
You know, just moved them to where I was.
Next
didn't
time,
take any money from the bank.
That we'll see,
took
but
my
that,
money
that's what we
me.
Wanted. It's like, well, this was already, yeah, my money, so.
Yeah. This was my money anyway. Fucking, I'm trying to get me somebody else's money.
Okay. Some, like a whole bunch of money that they won't miss.
Yeah, they just gave me a stack of fucking nickels and dimes.
That's what, just put that out there into the universe.
Yeah.
It's like maybe one of these days you'll wake, yeah, up and there'll be a big stack of cash, like at the end of the bed. That would be,
yeah,
nice.
From the bank.
Yeah.
Unmarked notes.
That would be
on
nice.
A big old fucking square.
See?
Album.
Just talk, yeah, about it. The more you talk about it, the more, yeah, likely it is that it might happen.
A little stack of hundreds.
Yeah, we could, okay, really use that right now.
A meter square. That's how big. On a pallet. Sitting right there. Bam.
Manifest.
Manifest that shit. Just teleport it.
Yeah, just think about it. Mm-hmm. Think about it. Visualize.
Well, probably there'd be another person inside my mind going, no, we can't do that because that's cheating. And
oh, shut up, other person.
Shut
up, other person. Tell that other person to shut up.
Then you just lay around, do steroids and shit. Fucking, you're going to have to get out of
so?
This bed. Yeah, you know. But there's always somebody in there who's going to try to mediate everything.
Like I said, tell that person to shut up.
Shut
they don't
up.
Know what the fuck they're talking,
yeah,
about.
Give me a whole fucking stack of fucking hundreds. From a secret
I
CIA
would submit,
yeah,
you know, just to that one, yeah, person in your head, that when you don't have money, it's much easier to just lay around in bed because, like, well, I don't have any money to go anywhere.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I can't go out to eat. I can't go out to the club. Yeah. I can't go out drinking or anything like that because it's like I don't have any money.
Yeah.
So you're just going to stay around in the house. If you have money, you're just like, woo, let's go out and do this, that, and the other thing. I mean, at least that's what I'm like. Yeah, so I'm just saying. So tell that person to shut up. Visualize it. I'm visualizing it.
Yeah.
So the family, entire family now, like, stays away, because I guess Michael and them, they went and stayed somewhere else, too. So the whole family has stayed away from the house for a few days. But then, like, after a while, they're like, well, we have to go back because, like, we have to work and stuff. And, you know, Esther and Jackie, they kind of want to move. Like, Esther is kind of bummed out because she's like, man, she's lived in this house for, like, 30-odd years. She's like, I love this house. And now I just don't want to be here anymore because of, like, all this horrible shit that's going on. But because it's a council house, you know, they have a long waiting list, like, to put you into a new one. So they said, you know, that's maybe, like, a 5-year wait or something like that, like, to put you in a new house. So they're like, there's no way we'd be able to, like, move right away. So they go into the house, and in the few days that they've been gone, it looks like it's been completely trashed. Like, it looked like a tornado hit it. Like, Michael said it looked like it had been ransacked, like, people had been in there ransacking it, but nothing was missing. Like, they couldn't find anything missing. Like, shit was just broken and just thrown everywhere, paper everywhere, shit like that. So, at this point, like I said, it's the mid-90s, so Michael doesn't really know what to do. He's like, well, maybe we should go to the media, and then if somebody hears the story, then maybe somebody will help us, because they didn't, you know, no internet. You can just, like, go search Ghost Hunters of Galway or whatever. Now, Jackie says, I don't think we should do that because, you know, people will just laugh at us. But Michael's like, well, you know, I don't know what else to do. Like, we have to, like, fight this thing. This is our house. You know what I mean? So the family ends up doing a radio interview with a radio station in Dublin. And it kind of got a lot of play. So subsequently, there's a newspaper reporter get sent to their house to do a piece on them. Now, they said that when this woman showed up, they said it was pretty clear that she didn't believe them. And she even said, like, straight up, like, oh, look, I don't believe in ghosts, or I don't believe any of this paranormal shit. Now, she was supposed to stay in the house overnight, I think. But she starts writing the story, like, almost as soon as she gets there. And they're like, well, why are you working on the story already? Like, you haven't even stayed here. And she's like, well, I don't think anything's going to happen. So blah, blah, blah. I thought I'd get a head start on it or something. So Jackie and Michael, at this point, they just kind of look at each other because they're like, well, they know something's going to happen because they just noticed that the house got really, really cold. And they said that's how you always knew that something was going to happen, because the house always got really cold, like, right before. So the reporter, like, comes in the kitchen with her laptop and she's like, hey, can I come in here and work on the story? They're like, sure. Yeah, whatever. So while everyone is in the kitchen, like, they hear something really loud, like, breaking in the living room. So they all run out there to check, and there's, like, this porcelain figurine or something like that, and it's broken in a million pieces, like, in the middle of the floor, like, somebody threw it, like I said, with great force. They said the reporter was very clearly scared shitless, but she's like, well, don't touch the broken thing because I got to take a picture of it, because this is like, I need a picture for the story. So the story comes out in the paper, and it, you know, it went the 1990s equivalent of viral, I guess. They said its reporters started coming from, like, all over Europe. It was in all the papers. They started calling the thing the Galway Ghost. So now there's, like, reporters and media and shit like that, like, all over their lawn, like, you know, shoving microphones in their faces, and people started whispering about them whenever they went anywhere. Hey, it's those crazy people that said. So some of the shit that they said was going to happen, like, that ended up happening. Although the reenactment, it wasn't too bad. They basically just showed, like, one or two reporters on their lawn and them going, like, we didn't ask for this, and, like, slamming the door. But it didn't look like, you know what I mean? There weren't, like, people camping out and shit or anything like that. Now, several days after that, I guess the initial reporter that did the newspaper story, she actually calls them and she said, there's this woman and her name is Sandra Ramdani, I guess is how you pronounce her last name. And she's a parapsychologist and a healer, she says. She had degrees in psychology and metaphysics. That's what they said on the show. Now, she has her own Wikipedia page, too. But, I mean, there's not a huge amount on it, but I went and checked it out. So, you know. So she comes to the house, and the family said, yeah, you know, as soon as she came in, like, you could tell she was, like, a really nice person, like, she very warm presence, they said. But Jackie was, like, really skeptical. He's like, I don't really believe in any of these psychics or anything like that. So it's like, we were really kind of like, okay, let's see what you can do then. So, as I said, now Sandra has her own Wikipedia page. She's still alive. She actually, and I think this is kind of interesting, and I don't think this is not anything to really argue about, but she thinks that psychic abilities are an innate part of the human consciousness and that they are not supernatural powers, which, okay, I'd agree with that. Also, she said she first discovered her abilities after entering a haunted house in Trinidad. That's where she was born, actually. On a night out drinking, which, okay. And also, she said that she first realized she had, like, extraordinary abilities when she was 2 years old. She said she could answer complicated medical questions posed to her by medical students, like, when she was very, very young. And she said that her psychic abilities also helped her complete college because she knew what all the answers to on the test were going to be. She's also published a book in 1995, and it's called Trapped Between Two Worlds, Experience of a Ghostbuster. And in 1997, she apparently claimed a 50,000-pound reward for exorcising a ghost, I guess, from some manor hotel, like, in County Kerry. The ghost was, like, supposedly groping female guests while they were sleeping, and I guess they paid her all this money to come in and do it, and I guess it was successful. Because they paid her the money, but that's a lot of money. So I don't really know. That's what, according to the Wikipedia page, anyway. But so, yeah. So she does have a short Wikipedia entry. So back at the Fahey house, the one we're talking about, Sandra said she was worried about Esther in particular because she looked, like, really tired and drained, like she couldn't really take this shit anymore. And she also said that she was glad that the baby, Sarah Louise, didn't look to be adversely affected by what was going on. Now, the family pretty much tells Sandra everything, and she's immediately interested in the fact that the phenomena started not long after Sarah Louise was born. So she goes up to the nursery and kind of starts feeling the walls and, like, doing the whole I'm feeling the vibes kind of thing. And then she asks them, apparently before they told her anything, she's like, have you guys done any construction in here? And Jackie says no, but then Michael said, well, you remember the neighbors did some, and they had, we had to move the crib to the other side of the room because they kept banging on the walls and shit like that. So Sandra was like, ooh, very, very interesting. Jackie said that he was very freaked out that she knew that, like, without them having to tell her, you know what I mean? So she asks if she can be left alone in the nursery so she can meditate or whatever. So while she's in there, she apparently said she started smelling something that smelled kind of like smoke for a second. And then she sees a really vivid, I guess it was like a vision. And she said that she saw the room around her, but it was like a completely different room. And she sees this young girl who's having a baby. And this man, who she said was apparently her dad, she said she got the sense that it was her dad, is helping with the birth. And then there's another man, presumably the baby's father, like, kind of standing off to the side and looking kind of angry. So the baby is born, and then the girl starts, like, reaching for the baby and screaming or whatever, and then the girl's dad hands the baby off to the other guy, who just straight up smothers the baby. Now, the dude that smothered the baby was a fucking dead ringer for Michael Shannon. For a second, I was like, is that Michael Shannon? It looked just like Michael Shannon. I mean, if you guys have seen this episode, is it just me? I thought that looked just like Michael Shannon. He's in a new movie about George Jones and Tammy Wynette, by the way, which actually looks really good. I love Michael Shannon. But yeah, so the guy looked just like him. So Sandra's story that she apparently gleaned from her vision is that sometime in the past, not in this house, I think she said that it was just on this land or on a house that was on this, you know, spot of land like previously. She said the baby that you hear crying is a phantom baby, obviously. Phantom baby. And this baby is essentially haunting the place after having been killed because it was born out of wedlock. So she says that the baby wants to be mothered by Martha, you know, the living baby, Sarah Louise's mom, and is essentially engaged in a little bit of, like, sibling rivalry with Sarah Louise because the ghost baby wants all the attention. Because you know how ghost babies are.
Yeah.
They have to have all the attention at all times. And they don't want no living babies getting in the way. So that's why, like, that baby was, like, really cranky and throwing shit around and everything.
Korea was filled with baby ghosts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a big thing in, like, Asian folklore, baby ghosts.
Because they were throwing their babies up on the mountains to die.
There's, like, a whole... I mean, if any of you guys have seen, like, Yokai Monsters, like, any of those weird-ass movies from... Those were the 80s or 70s? I can't remember.
70s.
But there is a baby 60s, ghost.
I think. No, that's
maybe. Early, yeah, maybe.
Late 60s, early 70s.
But there's a baby ghost in there that has like a big giant head.
Yeah.
That's like my favorite yokai from that. I mean, they're all good. The umbrella is good too, but I like the baby ghost. He's cute.
Yeah, they didn't have. They didn't really have abortion, so they just gave birth to the baby and threw the baby away. And that's what the baby ghost was all about. Abandoned children.
Hello.
They just starve.
Speaking of babies.
You leave them out to the elements. And I guess that was... Here's the thing, though. Some people said it happened during famine times. Other people said that it maybe didn't happen. That it was more modern Koreans and Japanese people believing that that was a common practice in ancient times for them. So they were worried about the ghosts of all those children. So it may not have happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It might have just been in the legend that that happened.
All right. So where was I? Oh, I will also note that I found a very brief article about this case, which was on, it's called RTE, which is Ireland's National Public Service Media. And they mentioned that the death of the baby, apparently, that this woman saw, had happened, they specified that it happened a century before, so 1890s, and was also witnessed by a priest and a nun, which they did not mention on the show. But I don't know if that's true or not, but I'm just saying that that was in the article, but it wasn't on the show. On the show, it was just, like, the girl's dad and the baby's dad, and the baby's dad, like, smothered the baby, because apparently it was born out of wedlock.
I don't put much into
because of the shame.
I don't put much into
Well, yeah, I don't really see any, like, I mean, is they didn't say that there was any way to, like, back that up.
No.
You know what I mean?
You
can say whatever bullshit you want.
Maybe
seriously.
She had a vision. Maybe she just made this story up to tell to the people there to justify an exorcism that would get rid of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The exorcism did get rid of it.
Yeah. I mean, and they didn't call it an exorcism. She called it a healing ceremony.
Yeah. But, that's
but same thing.
The exorcism did get rid of it because people believed the story and believed that it would get rid of it, so it got rid of it.
Yeah.
I think it was that mama. You know, and it was good, and she must have known it was poltergeist. It was only going to last a month or so anyway.
Yeah, because that stuff is usually very
right.
Short-lived.
So she cooks up a story. Oh, it's not you. It's this baby ghost. Baby ghost got killed. It's okay. Hey, you know, we're going to get rid of the baby ghost. Okay, baby ghost's gone. You don't have to worry about it. And then the phenomenon stops because she believes it. That's what I think happened.
I mean, I kind of I know this is terrible. I'm a terrible person. But Sandra, she says, okay, we're going to do a healing ceremony to release the ghost baby, like the spirit. So she is like, well, we don't want the real living baby in the house just in case, like, shit starts flying around or whatever. So Jackie and Esther, the older, like, grandparents, they take the baby out for a walk or whatever. And they're like, okay, well, all of the rest of us are going to do this healing ceremony. So Sandra lights, like, some candles and puts some crystals and shit, like, all around the nursery like they do. And then they bring in a bassinet and they put it in the middle of the room. And so then they all, like, join hands, like, close their eyes, do all that kumbaya kind of stuff, like, around this bassinet. And then she asks them to imagine that the ghost baby is manifesting inside the bassinet.
Yeah.
And to send all their energy, like, toward the baby, like, to release the spirit. So the ghost baby, I don't know why, this made me laugh. But so the ghost baby, like, appears in the bassinet, like, in this golden light, like, you know, and it says, what? It's this, like, golden baby.
The scent of sanctity.
I know, it was that kind of situation. And then the baby starts, like, floating up toward the ceiling. I was like, oh, my God, anti-gravity baby. And I was, because I'm a terrible person, like I said. But I don't know. Shit like that is just very, very funny to me. I'm like, floating baby. Like, you can't get much funnier than that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, a little ritual would give people the faith that they needed to think that the ghost baby was gone. And that's what ended the damn poltergeist phenomenon. That's what I think happened. That's what I think happened.
But yeah, so this baby starts floating up to the ceiling, and then it's they do like a brew, like across the ceiling or whatever. Now, Michael said, the real Michael, who was on here, because most of the family members were on here. The Michael was on here, and his parents were on here, and like the Sandra lady, she was on here. Now, Michael said that he saw the baby going up into this white light, but although the program showed him actually seeing it, like with his eyeballs, I kind of feel like it's more like he just saw it in his mind's eye type of deal. Like he was like imagining it, but I think it was like they showed it like more impressive because he was clearly like, wow, like looking up at it, like with his eyes open rather than like with his eyes closed, like imagining it.
He imagined it. Yeah.
That's kind of
where I visualized it. they're visualizing
right.
the thing going away, which helps to dispel the phenomenon. Yeah. Okay. That's what I think she did.
Yeah. It's
basically a witch doctor suggestion.
Yeah. Suggestion. I mean, yeah, I definitely think that's the case here. Yeah. So they said that they immediately, like, all felt better, like, oh, the ceremony worked. So they go downstairs, and then they said a couple minutes later, like, Jackie and Esther came back into the house, like, with Sarah Louise, and they said as soon as they came in, they said, it worked, didn't it? Like, they immediately knew, like, the feeling in the house was different or something like that. They said, oh, everyone was laughing, it felt all warm and shit like that. So, you know, so they're all, like, happy, and I guess they lived there but I don't know if they still live there nowadays, because, like I said, that was a long time ago, and this show was a long time ago. But apparently the ghost baby went off to wherever ghost babies go.
They go to New Zealand.
Is that where ghost babies go?
Yeah, they are New Zealand. The weather's good there. Only rich people live there, so yeah.
You know what's weird? You should say New Zealand, because I just, a movie that that I just watched this morning while I was on my exercise bike that I'm going to review this week was actually a New Zealand horror movie.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Yeah,
man, it was really good. Ooh, it was intense. I didn't know, like, one of, it was like a thriller, you know what I mean? And it was like, I had a hard time watching it. It was like fucking, it was like really, really suspenseful. I was like, oh shit, this is like so bad. But yeah. Baby on the ceiling. Sounds like Train Spotting. Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's right. The baby crawling across the ceiling in Train Spotting. I remember that. Then Mega said that is a freaky scene. That is like fucking. But yeah. So Ghost Baby floating up to the ceiling. So I guess that was like, that was the end of that story. Okay. Golden Baby floated up to the ceiling. And everyone lived happily ever after. Simple. And as I said, I don't really think. I mean, I don't really think anybody, like, looked this case up. Because I thought the implication was, I thought she implied that it hadn't happened in this house, that it happened on the land or in the house previous.
What's funny
is this is Ireland, so you'd think the house, I mean, 100 years old is, like, there's a lot of houses there that are that old and, like, way older, and people still live in them because they're stone, you know what I mean?
Had we known about this case, you could have put this in an unseen hand.
Yeah, it didn't really come up.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, this is, like, the exact, because this is classic.
Yeah.
Poltergeisty shit.
Yeah.
Like, phantom noises.
Yep.
Like, phantom smells. Shit flying around. Like, stuff arranged.
Yeah.
Like, in weird patterns. And shit like that.
Yeah, it didn't last long. Neighbors saw it. Did they see any feelings of presence or anything? They never did.
No, they never mentioned that. A couple times, Michael said that he felt like something was like pushing him, or like he, or like it was like he couldn't breathe, like pressing on his chest or something. But yeah, nobody said that they saw any apparitions or felt like someone was there. Nobody said that. I'm pretty sure nobody said that. I would have written it down.
Right.
But yeah, but other than that, it seems very, very poltergeisty.
Yeah, it's poltergeist.
But this was a good episode. So I'm surprised that we didn't remember it better.
We kept passing it over, thinking that it was Wheat Sheaf or horror.
You thought it was Wheat Sheaf.
Yeah.
I mean, Wheat Sheaf is a good episode too, but I tend to like ones that are in houses more than places of business, but, you know, I don't know why that is.
Yeah. All right, so we should probably go ahead and go, because we got to watch that damn movie, don't we?
Yeah, we got to watch a movie so we can talk about it tomorrow. We'll probably do.
We're not on a lot of sleep. So
that's true. Like, I'm really, really sleepy. Yeah, because like I said, I didn't fall asleep until late, and then I woke up a bunch of times, and then I woke up really early, like usual. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, we've been going for like almost an hour and a half, so that should be fine. All right, so tomorrow we will do a matinee show. Probably we're gonna find something to watch that's like not too long, because like I said, we're both really sleepy. So it might be a Universal movie. Because we've been talking about doing more Universal movies, so we'll try to find something that's like not too long. So hopefully you guys can drop by tomorrow evening and join us. Thank you for hanging out with us today. We will see you guys again tomorrow evening. Good night.